Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. Choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, you have to put up with me, or there's an on-off button on your radio. But I think you'll have more fun if you just stick around a little bit, because we're going to talk about cars, and we're going to talk about your car, and now's the time to get in, because the lines are wide open. So you won't have to wait. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. So if you call now, we'll get to you in a real quick hurry. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is up on I-17 and Bell on the east side of the road. He's a really great guy. His staff is really good. I know Kurtz. I know his staff. I know that they're honest. They're dependable. They have integrity. And more important than all, well, almost as important as all of that, is they really have the mechanical ability, the technical ability to fix your car. Kurtz has been open since 1992. He's been a member of good standing, a member in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. So if you live near I-17 and Bell, then give Kurtz a try. If you don't have a car repair shop that you really love, or you want to compare yours against one of mine, then knock yourself out. Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, just on the east side of the road. Sounds like I'm kind of suffering from being sick, but I'm not. I'm fine. Yesterday, I had an unbelievable day. I was invited over to the Phoenix Police Driving Track. And it was part of a program about the reserves. And I am talking to them about having lots of other people take advantage of this, because literally, you drive police vehicles with lights and sirens if you want, and you drive them really hard, probably not like you'd drive your own cars. And it was just a phenomenal experience. They had two teams of, I think, six guys each. No, there was four or five or six teams of six people each. There was men and women. I was partnered with the CEO of APS, so he's dressed really nice, and I'm wearing Levi's and riding boots. But we got along just fine, and him and I really did a good job. But you do two things on the track in the morning, then you have lunch, and Macayo's actually catered the lunch, and it was great. Macayo's is like my second home, and then the afternoon you have two. We started about 9:30, we were done at 3:30, and it was just a day of excitement. You're in a police car, and you're a passenger, and you're driving backwards at 60 miles an hour. You're in reverse at 60 miles an hour. And with the snap of his wrist, this police instructor, now this is the only trick that they wouldn't let us try, and I don't really blame them, but this is the only thing we couldn't do ourselves. With the snap of the wrist, the driver swings the nose of the car around, shifts from reverse to drive, and continues on, and he does it within a lane of traffic. The lane he does it in is as wide as the car, from front to back. So he's in reverse. All of a sudden, he whips the steering wheel. The car rotates clockwise 180 degrees. So the nose is at 12 o'clock on a camera, or on a clock. The nose is at 12. We're moving backwards. We're in reverse. And then all of a sudden, he whips the steering wheel. The nose goes from 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4, all the way down to 6, and then he puts it in drive and he takes off, and this is seamless. He doesn't even lose any mile per hour. I'm watching the speedometer. We're doing 60 in reverse. Then when he goes into neutral, we stay pretty close to 60, goes back to drive. We drop to maybe 57, and then he peels right up to 60. Now, we got to drive the Tahoes and the Impalas. We got to chase one another. Then they took us out, and if you wanted to, you could go out in the dirt and player. It was just an amazing day. Just an amazing day. And we have a caller on the line right now. May I ask who's calling?
We've got Don on the line.
Don, good morning to you. How are you? What can we do for you?
Good morning. Let me just turn my radio down here, please, while I was waiting.
Alrighty. And while we're sitting here waiting for Don, one of the things...
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a question, and it has to do with... Let me turn that off. It has to do with batteries.
Okay.
Now, Interstate battery, I've been told, is a very good battery. So I bought the last two of them. The first one failed just shy of 24 months. It has a 24-month warranty on it, so they replace it with no charge. The second one failed at about 26 months, so consequently I paid a proration of it of about $50. My question is, here in the Arizona area, here in Arizona, because of the heat, I know it's very bad on batteries, what is a battery that is more reliable for at least, say, 4 or 5 years?
There is none.
None for Arizona, huh?
You just answered your own question, because the overwhelming majority of the batteries that we replace, which numbers in the thousands per year, are right around 24 months, give or take a couple of months.
Well, now, I was over at Walmart the other day, and in their battery section for $100, they have a 3-year unlimited warranty on them. Why not buy a 3-year and replace it every 3 years free of charge, or 2 years?
Okay. And certainly that is an option. I wouldn't argue that point at all. That's an option. Here's how it works, okay? 3 years is 36 months.
Yeah.
I'm going to charge you $36 for a battery. Every month you use it, you're going to subtract a dollar from that 36.
Understand.
So if you go to 30 months, you're going to have to pay me $30 to get a new battery, because you didn't get the other 6 months that you should have got.
Yeah.
Here's what happens. People buy 10-year batteries.
Yeah.
And what that does is take 70% of your money and put it in their pocket.
Yeah.
And then you're working off that bottom end. So if you want to do that, then go ahead and buy the 36-month free replacement battery. But I'm going to tell you something. It's not going to make any difference if you buy a battery for $80 or $150, or if you find one of those for $500. Most of the time, you're going to be replacing somewhere around 24 months.
Hadn't thought of that, but it's a good point to make. So
yeah.
Consequently, like, for example, the batteries I now have are a 6-year warranty. Never get there.
Never.
Now, the other point here is the gentleman at the Interstate place, and I don't quite believe this, but as you look down your inspection, the holes, the 6 holes in a 12-volt battery,
okay,
about maybe an inch and a half or so down, there's a little lip. And I've always been told that you fill, like, distilled water up to that particular lip.
Okay.
And it's about an inch or inch and a half down below the top of the battery, and still there's sufficient water covering the plates.
Okay.
Okay, this guy says you're filling your battery too much. He says, take your finger and stick it all the way down, and you shouldn't be able to touch the water. In other words, at the point where they build the damn thing, and they make a little L on both sides to fill it to, he's saying that's too full.
Well, you know...
What is your point?
With all due respect to the gentleman at the Interstate store, I think he's full of bull.
Well, I do too, because I've been around batteries for a while, but I never thought about this 7-year warranty or 6-year warranty. If you're down here, you're only getting 2 years with them.
Well, again, the 7-year warranty, 7 times 12, is 84. So
right.
You're paying $84, but you're really playing with the bottom $24.
Right, I know.
And
I
get to keep all the rest. I don't know why he said that. I don't really know why he said that. The fact of the matter is that we have to have a place for not only the technical people, but for our customers to know where to go.
Sure.
It's always been that lip. It's always been the bottom part of the plastic.
That's
it's always been over the top of the plates.
Right.
And I would suggest that if you just put a quarter of an inch of water, eighth of an inch of water over the plates, that you might add water abnormally on an abnormal schedule much too soon. With maintenance-free batteries, do you know how they work, by the way?
A maintenance-free? Well, that's a gel battery, isn't it?
No, that's the number three battery.
Oh,
the
okay.
Number one's a conventional. That's called a low maintenance. That's the ones you're going to have to check the water on. Number two's a maintenance-free, and number three is the gel.
Yeah.
Okay, the number two is, it's like a rainforest. So we're going to seal up the battery, and as the water evaporates, it goes to the roof of the battery, and then it's cooled. And then it condenses, and it rains back down in.
I see.
So, but the gel batteries are a completely different animal.
Okay.
And you can mount them in any different, and there's lots of sales pitches, but the cheapest gel battery is like $200.
Yeah. Well, I saw $180 online this morning.
Yeah.
I was just trying to do a little research.
No, just buy that 36-month battery. That way they're playing with – they have $10 of your money that you're probably never going to get back from them. But well, the rest of the time, you've got all your money and you're using it.
Well, you know, one of the things in the past years – and I don't want to take too much of your time.
No, that's right.
But anyways, I used to always – when you buy a new car or in past years, there would be a maintenance-free – it was a sealed battery.
Right.
Okay? Those things never gave me service at all. And I came from an area that doesn't freeze normally, and it gets up to maybe for a month or so of a year, 100 degrees, 110 degrees, but I never got the service out of them until I went back to the batteries where you add water to them, and I always have, and I've always had good success. But here, with this heat, and your batteries for some damn reason are under the hood, I had an Audi at one time, like about 1980, and the battery was under the back seat, which made sense to me, but under the hood, of course, with all the heat that's generated, particularly here, I mean, I could just see it cooking that thing.
Okay, but I'm going to change your direction.
Okay.
Everybody says it's the heat, and that's a really easy way for us to do it. It has more to do with that. In the days when you and I were born and when we were 16 years old, we would take the top 5 to 6% off the battery, and we would work that area hard. So we'd depreciate the voltage in the battery 95% and then fill it back up to 100%, 95, 100. We'd do that. Today we use 50% of the battery.
I see.
So you have stuff in your creature comforts in your car that
sure.
just suck the electricity. So
sure.
the alternator is working really hard to keep the battery full.
Right.
The battery is like Swirl Lake. It's got a leak in it. And
yep.
it's constantly pouring water over the dam, and the alternator is trying to keep up with that.
Okay.
And then we also have vibration. Now, your battery is fastened securely to your car, right?
Correct.
If it's not, it bounces around, and that
One
will
minute.
Cut the life in half.
No, ours is securely.
So, and then in between the plates, we have these insulators. And when the insulators fall apart because they're cheap and they're not as thick as the really nice batteries, then they short the cells. That you lose the cell. It's a 12-volt battery. There's six cells. You lose two cell. You lose 2 volts. Now you're instead of 12 volts, you're at 10. And I got to go. And thank you very much, Don. Anybody else?
Hey, you bet. Thank you.
I learned a lot. Well, thank you very
much. Thank you very much. You got a great program.
Thank you. Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you want to talk cars, then I'm a gamer today. My name is Mark Salem. This is 960 The Patriot, KKNT. And this on Saturday from 10 to 12 is where you find lots of good car information.
No, yeah, I think you're a little ahead. Maybe try to refresh it.
Now on weekday mornings at 4, right before Mike Gallagher at 7.
I'm at 12. Intelligent.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said, "This ain't good. The timing belt's done shrunk one size too small. No spark plug wires are a little too long.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me until 12 o'clock noon. We're talking about cars, and if you'd like to join us, it's easy to do. If you have a car question, you can use anybody's name you want. You don't even have to tell us your real name. You can call in anonymously and blame it on your husband. Say, "My husband said this," and then that way we'll laugh at him. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Up north, Action Auto, Deer Valley area. Tom is one of those guys that when you meet him, you'll want to be his friend. He's that kind of a man's man. He is a nice, decent human being. He's not arrogant like I've been accused of being. He's a fisherman. He's a hunter. And he's just a very calm and just a very pleasant individual to deal with. So he can fix and maintain any make, any model, diesels, motorhomes. All of his technicians are ASC certified. They have L1 ratings. That's a high rating. Tom offers free roadside service, towing and coast-to-coast, 12-month, 12,000-mile warranty, and this is Action Auto. They have a rewards program where you accumulate points to help receive discounts on future repairs. So if you're looking for a good shop in the Deer Valley area, Action Auto is I-17 and Deer Valley Road. And if you give them a try, I promise you'll be a happy customer. David, you're up. David, how are you today? What can I do for you?
My wife has a beater car, I guess you call it. It's just something that she drives only in town in Glendale. And she's experienced. I just would like to find out what it is. When she tries to take the ignition key out of the ignition, it won't come out. So she jiggles the transmission. She wiggles the steering wheel, gets frustrated, and anywhere from 10 seconds to 2 minutes, finally the key pops out.
Okay.
Is that a problem with the transmission, it being put in park, or is it the ignition? I did spray some lubricant in the keyhole. That didn't do any good. You know,
okay.
All
right. What kind of car is it? I need to know that.
It's a 2002 Chevy Blazer S10, and it's got 160,000 miles.
Okay. I'll bet she's used the same key for 160,000 miles.
Well, actually, I got some new keys.
Okay. Did it start after the new keys were cut?
Well, it starts, but it's still having a problem with the pulling it out of the ignition.
Okay, but did the problem start after the new keys were cut?
Did the problem start after you got new keys, Kat? Oh, she says she's using the key that came with it.
Okay. All right, because most people have two keys, and we always cut off the second key that we never use. We never cut off the old key. But to answer your question, your worst-case scenario is that what you put your key into is called the lock cylinder.
Uh-huh.
Even though people think that's the ignition switch is about 20 inches away.
Okay.
So if you had to, you'd go into a repair shop, and they would replace it. This lock solenoid itself is $30 or $40. Your whole bill is going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $100, $110. And what you're going to get is a new lock cylinder and two new keys.
Okay.
And that's your worst case scenario. Now, don't spray any more lubricant in there, because WD-40 is the worst thing in the world for a lock. And and we got our butts chewed the other day from Dick's Lock and Key, because we took a lock in. And he looked at it, and he goes, haven't I told you 100 times to stop spraying lubricants in these locks?
Okay.
And I sent one of my employees, because I had sprayed the lubricant, and I knew I was going to get my tail end chewed, so I sent one of my employees to Dick's, and he chewed his tail end. So don't use that, but that's your worst-case scenario. Now, if you've never taken a steering wheel off, if you've never disabled an airbag situation, if you've never done that before, you don't want to try this one, because if you blow that airbag, it costs you $1,000, and it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Okay? So just probably have somebody else look at it, but it's not going to be a transmission issue because it works.
Okay.
It would never work if it – and she might take the shifter and pull up on it really hard and hold it.
Uh-huh.
And then she tries to back the key off to the out position. And then she relaxes the shifter just a little bit until it gets completely relaxed, which will move the shifter about a half an inch to an inch. And if any time in that position it does unlock, then it is the transmission linkage. But I doubt it, because you said she tries and tries and tries and tries and tries, and then pretty soon it'll work.
Yep.
And I think what you've got is a 160,000-mile key tumbler.
Okay.
Does she drink?
Only coffee.
Okay. I just thought I'd ask. Well, give her my best, and thank you very much for calling.
Oh, I got another question.
Okay, go.
Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, this car we've had for over a year. You know, we just bought it so that she could drive in town. A good reading on the transmission oil. I know you're supposed to turn the engine on and let it run and then pull the stick out, and I can't see a dang thing.
Okay, and that's not uncommon, because the fluid in today's cars is pretty clear.
Yeah.
So you just have to get a flashlight, shine it right on the stick itself. Now, some cars have to be in park. Some cars, all the directions on how to check the transmission fluid are written on the dipstick. So some of them are in park, some of them are neutral, some of them are off, some of them are running, some of them are hot, some of them are cold, some of them have a hot mark, some of them have a cold mark, but read the stick.
Yep.
Now, if you hold it up to the light, then you should be able to see it, or use a flashlight, and you'll see where the fluid level stopped at. But let me ask you a question.
Sure.
She has an old beater she drives, then she has this other car she drives.
No, that's my car.
Oh, you said it was her car.
The beater is her car.
So she drives the beater and you drive the newer
one? Well, she does. It's not a car. It's a truck, and she doesn't like driving the truck.
Does she like Benzes, Mercedes, BMWs, stuff like
well,
that?
Well, I don't think we're quite in that economic.
All right. Well, how about like a Honda or a Toyota RAV?
Well, yeah, that'd be great. Okay. Thanks. Do you want to get her one?
No, I'm thinking. You're creating problems from every guy, every wife and guy that's listening to the show, because you got your wife driving a beater and you got a new car.
Well, it's not really new, but it's a nice. But I understand. You know, we're working on that, and in a few more bills that are paid off. We looked at the Honda CRV and the RAV4, and the RAV4 evidently has a new transmission in it.
Yeah.
13s. That's going to happen.
All right. Well, you see, now you've said it, and we have it on tape. What's your wife's name?
Kathleen,
I have it on tape. And so,
okay.
Kathleen, I want you to remember, that December 1st at 10:26, I have it on tape.
Okay.
So if Kathleen, Mark at MarkSalem.com, if you need a copy of that tape, I'll make it for you, and we'll hold him to that. And you don't know it, but she called me earlier and told me you're calling in.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I got a commitment out of you. Raise your right hand for me just real quick. I promise to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do. Okay. I promise always to tell the truth. But, you know, one thing about your phone number is a comment that I wanted to make. In the newspaper, it doesn't have your phone number on there for, 960.
Yeah.
Good idea to put the phone number there. I had to wait and hear it on.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to make that note myself. Thank you for bringing that up. Because as little power as I'm allowed in this world, I'm allowed to make that change.
And I think it would be really good. You might get a few more calls.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. And that phone number for everybody that doesn't know it is 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. 508-0960. And you can call in and the lines are wide open and we'll take you just as quickly as we can. There's a big difference between lots of referral networks. As you can imagine, everybody has an idea of who's the best car place in town. AAA, Angie's List, Dex, GarageFly, Kudzu, NARPRO, RepairPal, 2Fixit, Your Auto Network, Yelp. All those people promise you that they have reviews that tell you the very best. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you what's missing. Why you shouldn't believe that. Because it's all about money. It's all, and you know it is. 602-508-0960.
Like you do your rent.
Well, we seem to have an abundance of wives calling in. They're trying to get you guys on tape, promising them all kinds of different stuff, so we'll avoid that the best we can. This portion of Under the Hood. Let me see where my levels are at right here and right here, because for whatever reason, things sound a tad... There we go. Sound a tad differently. All righty. Let me get my paperwork situated. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. There's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from somebody who tells me what a great job Quality Transmission did. I'm very proud of that. I'm very, very proud that my list of guys performs at such a high level. Quality Transmission has been around since, I don't know, he flew jets in Vietnam. Bob is an honorable guy. He's a veteran, and he never would pretend that we owe him something because he's a veteran. He's a very humble veteran. But he's a great guy. He knows right from wrong. And not, more importantly than knowing right from wrong, he does right and not wrong. That's important. So he's over there in Tempe. He's just north of University on McClintock. And if you have a transmission problem, he's really a good guy to go. All right, real quick before I take Tom and Wendell. This is the issue when it comes to referral sites. It's a matter of money, okay? If you got money, you can get on a referral site, and they'll talk good about you and tell everybody to go to your shop. So if I sign up with AAA or Angie's List, Dex, GarageFly, Great Garage, Kudzu, NARPRO, RepairPal, 2Fixit, Your Auto Network, and Yelp, then they'll just send you to my place. MarkSalem.com is different because in the fine print, the other guys say this. This is the fine print. You use these sites at your own risk. Great Garage says, we do not guarantee the services, repairs, or products they provide. Kudzu says, you are solely responsible for any loss that you may incur from using our services. Your Auto Network comes out and says, right out, Your Auto Network is not responsible for any and all work that is provided by the members. So how do you feel now? Here's what I say. This is written on my... There's six generations of my family in Arizona. We've been around a long time. I'm not leaving tomorrow. I've got grown adult kids in my business. This is what I write on my website. If you have a problem with one of my shops and the Better Business Bureau agrees with your version of the issue and the shop refuses to abide by the BBB decision, I will personally carry out the directives of the Better Business Bureau, which may include repairing your car or issuing a refund, and I will spend up to $5,000 to accomplish the task that the shop should have. That's the difference. You see? See the difference here? The difference is, and folks, the $5,000 represents dues for one shop for 7 years. 7 years. This is not a money-making proposition. This is me giving back because I'd rather be known as a giver as opposed to a taker. All righty. Tom, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you today?
Morning. Morning. How you doing?
Good, good, good.
Good. I had a question on storing a motorhome as far as batteries and tires. It's parked outside in San Diego about 5 months out of the year.
Okay. I would inflate the tires to the maximum inflation, and I'd cut some pieces of plywood. Of course, San Diego has pretty nice weather, but I'd still want to insulate the tires from the roadway. So I'd cut a couple of pieces of plywood that were maybe, 10 inches front to back. And no, I'd do more of that. I'd do 16 inches front to back, and I would do 10 inches wide. I'd do six of them.
2 minutes?
I'm sure you got duals on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd run them at maximum inflation while I stored it. And then as far as the batteries are concerned, the worst thing you can do is have somebody go over there and start it up every once in a while. That is the worst thing you can do. You have two choices. Either disconnect them. Only one lead. You need to disconnect the batteries. So on the coach batteries, one lead. You have to know which positive, which negative, but you can disconnect one lead, which completely isolates the batteries. From the main batteries that run the engine on the coach, again, it's just one lead. Usually you find the negative side. But you have to find the negative that goes into the circuit and the negative in the coach batteries that goes into the circuit. So either disconnect them or leave them connected and don't do anything. But when you start it up, it's just a huge waste of time and there's no benefit at all.
Okay.
All right. Did I get it all right?
Yeah, sounds good.
Now, let me tell you, I've been motorhoming since 1978. I've traveled the entire United States and Canada. My kids have been to all 50 states. And I'm telling you what I do to my own. So I'm not telling you to do something that I have heard other people do. This is what I do on my own. And that would and in San Diego, you're going to be better off than me storing my coach here in Phoenix.
Okay.
All righty.
I appreciate it. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much for calling. And Wendell, we got to give me your question real quick, and if you can't, it's okay, because I'll take you on the other side of the break. But Wendell, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2002 Chevy Suburban. It idles at about 450, which is a nice idle, except at that speed it will not pull the power steering pump, so I can't park it without power steering.
Okay.
How can I increase the idle?
Don't you turn any screws, Wendell. I'll come over there. You have a fuel injection system, and when I get back, I'll tell you what I would do to recondition your idle, because clearly something's wrong. We'll be right back right after this.
Mike.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, I should give you the phone number, 602-508-0960, and with the exception of two lines are gone right now, there's open lines available, 602-508-0960, and we're going to be on for the next 11 to 12 hours as well, so you're welcome to join us then. Right now we have Wendell on the phone, and we're talking about a Suburban idle. Wendell, when you start the car up, the computer is watching the RPM, and unlike a carbureted vehicle that's going to open and close and add fuel, on a fuel-injected vehicle, we add air to raise the idle. So if you're sitting down there at 400, we got a problem, and we're not going to turn a screw to fix the problem. There is a screw that people will mess with. You just jump to $100 the minute you turn that screw. Because in your throttle body, we have to synchronize three things. We have to synchronize the screw, the throttle position sensor, and the idle. And when you turn that screw, you change everything. So we're going to go in. How many miles are on Suburban, by the way?
180,000.
Oh, baby. Chances are pretty good that all we're going to have to do is clean the throttle blades. And if you want to try it yourself, go to marksalem.com, go to the FAQs, and look for throttle blade cleanup.
Okay.
Basically, you're going to take the rubber hose off the front of the engine where the air comes from the air filter through the rubber hose and is fed into the mouth of the motor. You're going to look in there, and you're going to see those two big brass silver dollar throttle plates, and I'll bet they've got jackets on. They're just filthy, dirty, back, front, left, right. The bores are dirty, everything. You're going to be embarrassed. Then you're going to take a screwdriver, and you're going to put a rag over the end of it and tape it to the screwdriver, and then you're going to put lots of carburetor cleaner on the rag. You're going to hold on to the rag or tape it good to the screwdriver so you don't leave it in there, and you're going to start polishing that. I do not want you to spray liquid carburetor cleaner into that hole, because if you spray it into the hole and it aspirates into the engine, you're going to bend the rods, and we've just gone to a $4,000 or $5,000 engine repair. Yep. This is critical you do it right. So you're now, a lot of guys, they say, Mark, what I do is I go behind the throttle plates, I put a coat hanger and a bunch of rags on it, and I feed them underneath the throttle plate, and I put the rags behind it to absorb it, and then I clean it with spray carburetor. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
Yes.
That will work as long as you ensure that that thing doesn't have any liquid that goes past those rags. But you're going to clean that up. Then you're going to turn the key on, and you're going to start it up. Then you shut it off. You're going to drive it. You're going to shut it off. And sooner or later, it should come back. Now, there's also an idle air control motor. And the idle air control motor is a cone that goes into a hole. And that's the air bleed we use to raise the idle. So if I wanted to make sure that your car would idle at 700, I would attach my little attachment to your idle air control motor. And I'd go, and I'd open that Hummer up a little bit. And it'd go, woo. And the more I went open, and I'd say, okay, well, the idle air control motor seems to be working. Then I'd pull it out, clean it up. By the time I got done synchronizing the voltage on the TPS at 0.87 to an idle of 600 RPM to clean throttle blades, an idle air control motor of a step count of maybe 8 or 10 or 12, you'd be done. That would all cost you about $125, $150 to do all of that, assuming you need all three. That's cleaning the throttle blades, cleaning the mass airflow sensor, resetting the minimum idle authority, and pulling out the idle air control motor and cleaning it up after 180,000 miles. But that's what you need. There's no screw to turn here, buddy. It's cleanup.
Okay. What was your website again?
MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com. Mark with a K and Salem like a cigarette.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You betcha. Thank you very much. All righty. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you today?
Thanks very much. My daughter had a 2000 Nissan Sentra she bought 3.5 years ago, and it still had the tires on it when she bought it, and I was noticing cracks in the sidewall, so I told her, you must get new tires, which she did. Can you talk about the replacement of tires based upon age and not just tread wear, please?
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Thanks. You've opened up the huge subject. In a nutshell. There, in our industry, we are arguing about this on a regular basis, and this argument has been going on for about 3 or 4 years, and I expect it'll go on for another 5 or 6 before somebody in authority will finally just put a kibosh to the discussion and come out with some rules. One half of the industry says, oh, we have to put an expiration date on tires. Guys like me say, oh, how convenient, Goodyear. To put an expiration date on tires. How convenient. What a nice marketing plan. What are we going to do about Mrs. Smith in Ahwatukee or in Sun City who drives 1,000 miles a year? Or are we going to expire her tires when she has 90% of the tread left? So then they say the tire's biggest enemy is oxygen. And I say, okay, well, my tires in Phoenix are subjected to heat, where the tires in North Dakota, Minnesota, and Upper Michigan, they're not. But there's the same amount of oxygen in both places. And so I'm confused. But I will agree to this. If I got to make the rules, I would say this. We're going to put an expiration date on people who drive the 40, the Highway 40, which is north of the Highway 10. And those of you that may not know this, all the east and west highways in the United States start at the very bottom at 10, and they go 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, and 90. And 90 is way up at the top of the country. So there's an east and west. So Highway 40 is the second one north. Everything, Highway 40 south, if you're in that area because of the heat, I would probably time out your tires 5, 6, 7 years, depending on the use. If Mrs. Smith in Ahwatukee and Sun City only drives, and I do this with my tongue in my cheek, to the liquor store, then I'm not going to time out her tires. On the other hand, the people that live north of the 40, I would time out their tires longer because they don't have the heat. And while we're all going to and they say, oh, the tire disintegrates and it deteriorates even when it's sitting on the shelf. I struggle with that. I've been told by experts I'm wrong. I still struggle with that. In your case, there are superficial cracks. I have personal knowledge about superficial cracks. I left in my motorhome not too long ago, and my son said, you're crazy because the back tires have superficial cracks, and I want to put a set of four on. I said, son, you were born when I was 26, and you don't know nothing. So my wife and I take off, and on our way home in El Paso, Texas, we blow a rear tire. So when I got home, there was four brand new ones sitting on the floor waiting for me, and I called and ordered them because... but I took a chance and I lost, and it's okay. The idea is that cracks, there are some superficial cracks there that should not worry anybody, and then there's other cracks that should worry you. It depends.
These were not superficial. I took a penny, and you could stick the penny in, and it would hold the penny.
That's the difference. Now, let me put it to a business card kind of thing. If you can't get a business card into this crack, then I'm saying it's not. That's my personal thing. It's not going to do it. And your penny, if it fits, it's. I'm with you. I would have agreed with you, Bill. I would have had my daughter change the tires as well. I'd had my mother. I might not have had my wife's, but everybody else.
How about your mother-in-law?
You know what? I like my mother-in-law, and besides that, she listens to the show.
I just thought it was $350 of good insurance.
No, you're right. Your tires are going to be sold, and they're going to be put on a used car. And those people are going to drive them, and they can be their problems. But I personally object to the idea that we're going to put an expiration date on tires when we have such tremendous, big, wide divisions between North Dakota and Phoenix, between Miami, Florida, and Seattle. We've got such tremendous differences. How can we possibly be fair to everybody? In reality, right now, with my work with insurance companies and law enforcement and stuff as a mechanical expert and as somebody who's an expert on the maintenance of tires, right now, we see, of all the tires I see, if I have 100 cases of tires, then maybe one, two, or three, it comes up that the tire is an old tire. So I'll even go 10%. 10% of the tire cases I have is the tire is outside of 7-8 years. I've seen tires 15 years old, and they still have air in them. So it's the heat that kills the tires. That's why Interstate 10 and Interstate 40 are littered with black pieces of tires, is because they're difficult to drive on. But they want to time out RV tires, and RV tires run, if you got other than a 16 or a 17 or a 19-inch wheel, if you got a 22-inch wheel, the RV tires can run you $300 to $500 a piece times six. And people only use their motorhomes about 10,000 miles a year. So at the end of 8 years or 5 years, at the end of 5 years, you have 50,000 miles on it, and we're going to ask you to replace all six tires and throw away what I would believe perfectly good. And let me tell you, the difference is the tire that I blew up was 9 years old. I was just trying to prove a point, and I guess I didn't do a very good job. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
All righty. Anybody else out there, Jeremy?
We got Sue up next.
Sue, good morning to you. Sue, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Oh, Mark, I hope you can help me. I'm a little old lady. I feel like I have a sign on my back. When I go to the shop, I do go to my dealer.
Okay.
But I don't know a camshaft from a head shop.
Okay.
I really don't.
All right.
Okay. My car, it's a 2006 Honda Pilot.
Okay.
I have 86,000 miles on it.
Okay.
I bought it new.
Okay.
When it had 56, I didn't, it was new to me. I bought it used.
Okay.
It had 56,000 miles, and the dealer put new tires on.
Okay.
When I bought it. Okay. The front end shimmies up and down, not sideways, up and down. When I apply the brake, if I'm doing 40 miles an hour or more. And my brother suggested either I need to get it aligned or one of my tires is out of round.
Ooh. You know, you did a wonderful job in describing that. I am 100% sure of two things.
Okay.
I'm 100% sure your brother's wrong.
Okay, good. I'll tell him that.
And I'm 100% sure that you have described in the most eloquent way, a brake rotor warpage. Yeesh. The key here is you described the up and down is fine.
Uh-huh.
The key here is it only does it from a high speed stop, and it does not do it from 10 or 20 or 25 or 30. Am I right?
That is correct.
Now, a tire that's out of round or has a defect in it, it'll have a vibration that comes in at 20 or 30, and it'll get worse the faster the tire goes, and it has nothing to do with the brakes. An alignment never causes a vibration. It will cause a tire to wear abnormally, which will then cause a vibration, but aligning it is not going to fix the tire that's causing the vibration, because fixing the alignment just fixes the problem, doesn't really it fixes the cause, but not the result.
Okay.
So in a very eloquent way, you did a great job, because, and I wish all the guys that did business with me would just tell me the symptoms. The women come in and tell me symptoms. The guys come in and tell me how to fix their cars, and they're never right. Just
well,
like your brother.
Well, that's because I listen to you.
and here's what I want you to learn something, all right?
Okay.
I want you to repeat after me. Sue? No. Sue, I'm pretending I'm your service writer.
Okay.
Sue, I've looked over your Honda Pilot, and you need A, B, and C. And Sue says, why don't you tell me what symptoms are related to A? And he goes, I don't know. And then you say, well, when you figure out what symptoms are related to A, then let me know, because I want to know what symptoms you're going to fix with your $295 upper intake cleaning that you say I need to have at 60,000 miles or at 90,000 miles in your case. So you have to learn that. What symptoms are you going? And then here's number two. This separates the men from the boys.
Okay.
Write it down on a piece of paper. No, you're saying to them.
Write it down. Yes, I want it in writing.
And I want you to sign your name, big boy. Because if they're lying to you, they ain't going to sign it. They ain't going to fill it out. If they think they're playing with you, they're not going to do that. So you just be... And then sometimes you can say, write it down, sign your name on your business card or whatever. Give me a specific estimate, and I need some time to think about it. Then take it from where you're at to another shop, and don't tell them where you came from. You just say, another shop down the road told me that I need this. Would you look at my car and tell me if you agree or disagree? Now, it's true that the independents and the dealers, we are competitors. I tell people if the independent shop tells you something, go check with the dealer. I tell people if the dealer tells you about something, go check with the independents, because we like to pile on, so to speak. So when we come back, we're going to take more calls. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Saban. We'll be back right after this with one more hour.
Do you have dark?
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed out up inside.
Welcome back, everybody, for another hour of Under the Hood with Mark Salem. I'm your host, and I'm a car expert, and I'm here after your best interest. I'm looking after your best interest. I'm not here to sell you anything. I have a list of shops that I've created 20 years ago because we need a good list of shops, and these are guys that have performed unbelievable. I told you last hour that I guarantee that you're going to have a good experience. I guarantee you're going to have be treated fairly is more proper. It specifically says, if you have a problem with one of my shops, then I have a process where you go to the Better Business Bureau, you file a nice complaint, the Better Business Bureau processes the complaint, and the end result is an arbitration. At the arbitration, if the arbitrator tells the shop to fix your car or to refund you money and the shop refuses, two things happen. Number one, I kick the shop off. Number two, I'm going to pay to either fix your car or I'm going to personally fix your car. It's one or the other. up to 5,000. I put 5,000 on there because 100 didn't mean any sense, make any sense, and 5,000 covers lots of engines, lots of transmissions. So I thought I'll just step up, and I've never paid a dime in 20 years. Never paid a dime. Now, we've never even had a complaint go to arbitration. My group of shops, 50, 60 shops, never even had one go to arbitration. That's why, because they do it right. And when they do make a mistake, they know it. They write a check, just like I write a check. So it's important. And 1 out of 100 that apply to be on my list might make it. It's not about money. It's not about getting as many people on my list as I can. It's a very exclusive list. And you can find it at marksalem.com. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Another good example of a great shop, Main Street in Stapley. Just east of Stapley on Main, Thompson has been in business since 1970. Second generation shop. They're equipped to handle anything. Major, minor, repairs, foreign, domestic cars, motorhomes. They're AAA approved. They're ASC certified Blue Seal shop. What that means is that they've got more than half of their technicians are ASC certified in the tasks they perform. That's pretty special. They also have lots of master techs as well. Brian is on a TechNet council for CarQuest, which means he helps create industry standards and talks about them. Thompson's was named the Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. And Brian and Thelma Thompson at Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa, they're a great place. So if you're in East Mesa and you don't have a repair shop, then Main and Stapley just east is a great place to go. That's Brian and Thelma. Okay, we were talking with Sue and Ken. I'm going to get to you in just a second here. Sue, one other thing I wanted to tell you, too, is my dad used to say if it drives in, it'll drive out. So if that little women do this, men don't. First of all, I don't know if men have a voice inside their chest, but if they do, they don't listen to it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be men. But women have that little voice. It's the same voice that talks to you when your kids come home late and they're lying to you. It's the same voice that talks to you when your husband comes home and he's lying to you. You just know. Listen to the voice inside your chest. And if in doubt, do nothing. But don't just say no thank you and walk away. I want you to write down what I need specifically. I want you to write down the specific part and then give me a number for the labor and then give me a total amount for this job. And then write it on a piece of paper and sign your name to it. No, don't put it on the work order because you can't sign the work order. No. This is on a separate piece of paper. This is no problem. Just staple your business card and initial it. Whatever. That's what I want you to do. Because really and truly, women hold us to higher standards. Just quickly, the other day, a guy goes into a shop and its car's towed in. The belt's blown off of it. They tell him it needs a water pump. When he gets to pick up the truck, it's got a huge bill. And they put a water pump and what they call a fan mount. So he takes the water pump around, and there's nothing wrong with the water pump. And then he figures out, well, is this water pump really off my truck? So then he finds out, yes, it is. But there's nothing wrong with the water pump. Well, the water pump paid $400 in labor, but the fan frame, this fan mount, only paid like $60. So it appears from the outside looking in that they told him the water pump seized up, which blew the belt off of it, which isn't true because the water pump's not driven by this belt that came off. So they sold him a water pump that he didn't need because that's $400 worth of labor. And we also charged you $60 to replace this fan mount. So he took all this information back to the shop owner, and he got all of his labor back. They wouldn't give him the water pump money because he gets a new water pump. I would have held out for the water pump money. But I want the labor and the water pump because clearly I didn't need it. Either you misdiagnosed it or you tried to take advantage of me. I've got stories like that every day of my life. And you can read about many of those stories. I had a lady the other day, $700, and I'm still got the problem. This is the website you go to. It's AZ Central, so it's azcvoices.com. Adam Zebra Charlie, AZC. That's for Arizona Central. Voices, all one word, .com. Then you click on cars. And I post there on a regular basis. And there's lots of nifty information on AZC Voices, Arizona Central. And it's Arizona is AZ, and Central is just a C, and then the word voices.com. I put blogs up there a lot. And there's lots to learn from there. It just teaches you how to protect yourself against our industry. And it's not very much of our industry. 10, maybe 20% of our industry is out to take advantage of you. The rest of us are playing by the rules. Okay, Ken, good morning to you. Thank you for holding as long as you have. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. About a month ago, I bought a 2000 Chevy S10 pickup V6 automatic from a private party. And I took it to the dealer to get the oil changed and just kind of look it over. And they reported that I had some oil leaks and also I needed motor mounts.
Okay.
The truck only has 43,000 miles on it, and it's been sitting around a lot. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But they put a dye in the oil to see if they could determine exactly where the leaks were. So when I went back to replace the motor mounts, they determined that I had oil leaks at the rear main seal, valve covers, and the oil pan, and also that there was excessive crankshaft in play.
Okay.
I guess my first question is, if it was just sitting around, how did all this happen? Why is it spring all these leaks? And the other question is, is it feasible to go ahead and fix all this stuff, or should I consider putting a new engine in it?
Well, let me ask you some questions first.
All right.
Did you see all this oil leaking on the ground?
Oh, no. It's very slight. One drop, maybe.
Doesn't that concern you? I mean,
let
me tell you something. Everything that could leak oil, they've mentioned. Front seal, rear seal, oil pan, and valve covers.
Uh-huh.
What else is there?
Well,
and wait a minute. I want to talk now.
Okay.
All right. I get on a roll here. Wait a minute, buddy. You've just told me everything leaked. What'd you put dye in for? You could have given me those four things without putting dye. Dye allows you to follow the colored oil directly to the place. So you're telling me that you've got orange dye or green dye or red dye coming out of both valve covers, the oil pan, the rear main seal, and the front seal?
Well, yeah,
and where's all? Wait a minute, where's all this oil at? I get a drop a night, buddy. Not dropping. Now let's talk about motor mounts. What symptom are you going to fix with your motor mounts?
Nothing. I just went by the dealer. Looked. Okay. I took it to the dealer.
And did you ask for your old motor mounts back?
Motor mounts are withered and cracking and need to be replaced.
I want to tell you something.
I did that.
I'm going to tell you something. If I catch one of my technicians talking about a motor mount being weathered or cracked, I'm going to fire his tail in right there, right then.
This was a Chevrolet dealer.
I don't care who it is.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care who it is. If it was an independent shop, I don't care. I got to tell you something. You know why people use words like seeped? Your oil pan is seeping. It's because they're too doggone scared to stand up and say something so they don't get into trouble because they're lying anyway. Weathered? A motor mount is weathered? What symptom are you going to fix, man? Here's the symptom. If the load side mount is weathered and broken, then there's going to be a vibration and drive that will go away in neutral. Did you have that? The answer is no.
No symptoms. It runs great.
None. And on a hard acceleration, the motor will lift up and fall back down. So you hard accelerate from a traffic light. You count to 1, 2, 3. You let go, and there's the thump. Did you have that?
No.
Oh, so if you don't have any vibrations and it's as smooth as glass in park, reverse, neutral, drive, then what the heck did you put motor mounts in it for? Shame on you.
I trusted the Chevy dealer to tell me the truth.
How much did that cost you?
$500.
Okay, so you spent $500, but you could have gone someplace else and said to them, or you should have said to him, the biggest question is, what symptom are you going to fix? And he's going to go, that's what he's going
to
say.
Well, I did go to another shop.
Okay, what'd they say?
And it's one of your recommended guys.
Okay.
And they said, yep. Motor mounts are bad.
Okay.
And they gave me an estimate on replacing them.
Okay. I that's why I want you to ask for the motor mounts back, because I would like to compare those motor mounts.
Uh-huh.
But you don't have any symptoms, and you got 40,000 miles on a vehicle that's 12 years old. So let me
see
that. 12 into 40 is what? 12,000 miles? No. 2,000 miles a year.
It's 4 or 5.
Yeah. Okay. I just don't understand. I don't understand about the oil leak. You got a little drop.
I don't either.
And,
then, that's,
and this
that's end, why I called
and this crankshaft end shaft play. You know why? They're saying you have some crankshaft and shaft play, because if they don't put those oil, those seals in front and back appropriately, it'll leak, and then they're going to say, oh, well, we already told you that because the end shaft, the end play is bad. That's BS.
When they fix the oil pan, they say they got to pull the engine.
Well, it is easier to do. And see, the rear main seal is one repair, and the oil pan is another repair. If we're going to do them both, and the reason why they're doing both of them is because they can't tell you which one is leaking at the back of the motor.
Uh-huh.
They don't, and I don't know either. I couldn't tell. I'm going to tell you the truth. The bottom line is this. You can't tell when it's rear main and the back of the pan.
1 minute.
So you say to the customer, I'll do the pan first, and if that doesn't do it, I'm going to have to do the rear main seal. What they're saying to you is, let's do both of them at the same time. Let me pull the motor. I'll do both of them. That's true. I'm going to agree with them. That's true. The problem is that you don't have any symptoms for all of this repair.
No, just a drop of oil now and then.
And the end shaft has a completely separate set of symptoms all of its own. And then you should have said to them, well, how do you measure that? And you go, blah, 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 and you say, well, I'm going to go home and look on the internet, and find out how you do crankshaft end play. Oh, it says here that you're allowed 6,000ths or 8,000ths. You call him back and say, ask the technician what the end play was on my crankshaft.
Mm-hmm.
And he ain't going to call you back. Now, see, here's how the bad shops differ from the good shops. And I'm not going to talk about your Chevrolet dealership, and I'm not talking about them now. All shops. When I get back, I got to take a break right now. When I get back, I'm going to tell you what the difference is and how you really get taken to the cleaners at repair shops. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. The lines, we have a couple open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Family-owned, and that means something to me. Family-owned, full-service, 38th Avenue and Indian School. If you go Camelback south to the 10, and in between the 101 on the west side and I-17 on the east side, Larry Harker's handles that area. Now, you can come from any part of town. They are really good. They're very honest and very dependable. They don't play with your money, and they don't fix things that don't need to be fixed. So if you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School or anywhere close to that, then the owners, Bob and Ellen Frisbee, who own Larry Harker's Auto Repair, I'm proud to recommend them. One of the things about the repair shop industry is how we pay our staff. And, of course, commission is a bad word. It's not really a bad word. It's pay for performance. I pay all my staff on pay for performance. Here's the difference. And I didn't invent this, folks. We were talking about Ken, and Ken had taken a car in 40,000 miles, and it needed god-awful amount of work. It needed valve covers because they were leaking. Oil pans leaking. Front seals leaking. Rear seals leaking. And then it needs... let me see. There was motor mounts. Oh, and then oil leaks. Yeah, those two things. The technician will come up front and present a list of what the car needs. He's hoping nobody's going to go back and look. He's hoping the shop foreman's not going to go back and look. He's hoping nobody questions him. That's why the technician uses words like seeping and weathered and cracked. At my shop and many, many other shops, we don't let them use words like that. The motor mount is broken. The motor mount has collapsed. You have a bad vibration in driver reverse. You have a clunk on hard acceleration, don't you? You have a seeping power steering hose, and it's $600. That doesn't fly. Have you seen oil on the ground? Yes. What color is it? It's red. Or it could be brown, or it could be clear. Have you been adding power steering fluid to it? Yes. The high pressure hose is leaking. If you want me to fix the leak that you know about, I'll do it by replacing the high pressure power steering hose. That's what good auto repair is all about. That's what honest auto repair is all about. Folks, it's no secret right now. Our economy is in shambles. It's no secret that every business is clamoring for customers. The good shops do this. The service writer is between the customer and the technician. May I ask you this? Who does the service writer work for? Who does the service writer work for? Who does management tell the service writer that they work for? Do they work for the technician? Are they nothing more than a mouthpiece for the technician? Or do they work for the customer? You see, it's that old proverbial that waste runs downhill. The good shops are going to say to their service writers, if there's ever a question about the correctness or the appropriateness of a repair, your butt's the first one on the chopping block. You have a responsibility to go out and have him sell you. And only after are you sold are you going to present this to the customer. So you can answer all the questions. But if I work for the technician, then I'm nothing more than his mouthpiece. And I'm going to do all I can to sell you what he said you needed. So, now, Ken, I'm going to ask you one favor. I'm interested in seeing some of your repair bills. And I'm also interested in the name of the shop that's on my list that looked at the mounts and said yes. And I would appreciate if you would either fax that information to me or email me at mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem, S-A-L-E-M.com. You can if you email me, I'll give you my fax number. It's too much to give you right now, but I'd like you to fax me the bills. I'd like to look at them. I would also like to talk to the shop on my list, and I want to see what they say. Now, one of two things could happen next week. I could apologize all over myself because they saw something that I'm doubting. On the other hand, I may very well say to them, these are our procedures, and just be careful about this kind of stuff. Maybe they did a parking lot diagnosis where they just went outside and looked at it, looked at the bill, and they said, yeah. Maybe they should have said symptoms or talked about symptoms, but that's what really needs to happen. All righty, Mark, you're up next. Mark, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've got a 2005 Acura RL that needed a lower bank one catalytic converter.
Okay.
They also told me that at the same time, I need to do something called an induction service. I don't know what the heck an induction service is. They told me that's what causes the problem with the catalytic converter. And anyway, I'm trying to figure out if that's good advice or not.
All right, let me just change the question, if you don't mind. I want you to call a couple of shops around, and I want you to say to them, do you do an upper induction service cleaning? And how much is it? And would you please share with me the symptoms related with that? I promise you the 20 minutes that you spend doing that will be the best 20 minutes you've ever heard of. The second question might be very well, and I'm hoping that at least half the shops say we don't even do that because mine doesn't, and there's a whole lot of us that don't do that. That is such a ridiculous transition. The size of your shoes is going to have everything to do with the size of your earlobes. Does that sound good to you?
No.
Okay. An induction cleaning has specific symptoms. In your particular case, it's the catalytic converter. It's not the O2 sensor he wants to replace. It's the CAT, right?
They did. They said both. They said they weren't sure on the O2 sensors. There are two O2 sensors, apparently. I don't know if they're inside that catalytic converter or related to it.
All right, let me tell you. Let me tell you what it is.
Okay.
This is, you are the technician. I want you to understand that one is lean, no fuel, and nine is rich. Are you with me so far? Those are the numbers. You are the front oxygen sensor.
2 minutes.
You have fuel. You have exhaust that's laden with fuel coming into the front part of the catalytic converter, which is nothing more than a big blow furnace. So I want you to assume that we're going to come in at 7, okay? So we're running a tad rich on the front side.
Right.
When that furnace is in red hot condition, what's the back O2 sensor going to say? Is it going to say 1, I don't see any fuel, or is it going to say 7, I see the same fuel? What's it going to say?
I would think it'd say the same.
Okay, but forget the furnace is lit. The catalytic converter is a big furnace. It's a big gas furnace. We're supposed to burn the fuel.
Burning it all up.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So if we come in at 7, what are we supposed to, what is the second post-CAT O2 sensor supposed to say?
I assume it'll say 1 or something.
Absolutely
else.
Right.
1 minute.
And we plug our scanners into your car and we say, hey, O2 sensor pre-CAT and post-CAT, talk to me. What do you mean you can't tell? Now, they may have said this. I have a dead O2. The front one's showing 0.1, and the back one's showing 0.1, and that's not right. Excuse me. I need to replace that front one, but I still may have a dead cat.
You know what? Let me correct a little bit.
All right, hold on. I got to break a break. Okay. I'm going to hold you on. Okay. I'm going to hold you on. Okay. But the idea is it's not true that we can't tell you that the O2s are good or bad. That's not true. Hold on just a minute. The fact of the matter is we can tell you because we can read them. He may say the second part of it is the O2 or the cat. So when we come back, we'll take that question. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. And I promise I'll feel better in a minute.
Most Friday nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck.
Well, welcome back, everybody. As you can probably tell, my underwear's kind of wound up really tough right now, and we're just struggling trying to get my head back together real quick. Let me tell you what happened a while ago with a repair shop that was on my list. A guy went in and they quoted him $1,000 for a radiator. The guy called around and he found out that Westside Radiator, that's a company, a good company by the way, said that they would do the job for $300. When the guy called back to this shop that used to be on my list, he was told that there's no way that they could do it for $300 because his cost was $300 on the radiator. So then the guy called me, and he said, I did have it done it for $300. First they said that, oh, we did make a mistake. It's not $1,000, it's $600. Then I called around, and I found it for $300. He says, and then I called him back, and they said that there's no way, again, that they can do the radiator because it's $300. So he complained to me. Now, I don't ignore your complaints. I'm your best buddy. If you're right, I'm your best buddy. If you're wrong and you decide to take your anger out on me, then you've got a really old cowboy by the tail. So the idea is that I look at it and I find out that the dealer list price on this radiator is $290. That's not what we pay for it, but it's $290. But I find out on the aftermarket, we can buy that radiator for $100. So it's not true that the radiator cost him $300. And then he immediately came down from $1,000 to $600 because he said they made a mistake in the labor. Folks, we don't make those mistakes. You're not supposed to do that. And so when I got involved, I asked for explanations. And I got a bunch of lip service. And then there was two more complaints just after that with the exact same problem, and I got involved in both of them. And one of them was I needed brakes all the way around, and we looked at it, and we said, no, you don't. You have plenty of brakes left. So I kicked him off in a very public way because I don't put up with that. I'm not going to tout my resume in front of you, but I'm going to tell you this. General Motors, Ford, and Dodge have all hired me to answer the tough questions. The police departments, the insurance companies, judges, they've asked me determine what's right and what's wrong in this particular mechanical issue. I'm honored by the most important part of the industry calls me a consumer advocate in spite of the fact I run my own shop. I am a consumer advocate. I know right from wrong and I practice right from wrong. Now, I'm a little ornery sometimes and there's some people out there that may not like me and I don't care about that. The bottom line is I'm a giver, not a taker, and I know the difference between right and wrong, and I not only know the difference, but I practice the difference. So nobody on my shop list is going to take advantage of people on purpose. And if they make a mistake, sure, one mistake, I can see it. But a series of mistakes is just not acceptable. Okay, now that I've said that, MarkSalem.com is where you can find the best repair shops. Just click there and follow the leads. Let's go to Harry. Harry, how are you today? What can I do for you?
Hi, Mark. Good show. Outstanding.
Thank you.
I've got a this will probably wind you up a little, too. You've talked before about wallet flushes.
Yeah.
My question is, I've got a couple of vehicles that are right around 9 or 10 years old, bought them new, had them serviced at the dealer through the years until the warranty ran out, and I have one of your shops doing it now. I've asked them in the past about, maybe needing, power steering, fluid changed or brake fluid, changed. Just when do you determine, you kind of want to kind of keep that when do you determine that you should probably do this on a vehicle that's, you know, 9 or 10 years old?
Okay. The answer is, let me tell you something funny. I read just the other day, for the first time, a really good way to check power steering fluid, because frankly, we have no scientific way. Right now, it's just taste it, smell it, and look at it and condemn it. That's it. I sent my wife out the other day, and I had her buy 10 turkey basters, or liquid basters, those things you suck, you know, gravy up. And I had her buy 10 inches of coffee filters, because the new technology, believe this or not, suck some power steering fluid out, stick it through the coffee filter, let it sit there for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, and then look and see what kind of debris is there. That's it. That's what we got today. We have no other scientific way to do it. And I like that way, because we're really fleshing trash out of it that it has, or it doesn't have any trash. It's not the color. You default at 60,000 miles on the fluids. If you don't know, you go 60,000 mile increments.
That's what I'm at, about 60.
Okay. And so yeah, but I wouldn't do the brake fluid flush until I did my next brake job. Do it while you do it. But that, there's a little bit of savings there. The power steering flush, you might want to wait till you replace the hose, and they're going to flush it anyway. Or you can say to them, no, you know how we flush it? We're using a machine that's very expensive. It's like $6,000. But we're going to stick 2 long straws inside your reservoir. One is shooting new fluid in, and the other is sucking it out. And we do that for about 10 minutes. And the reason why the flush is so expensive, because we're going to use 4 quarts to flush your system. Meanwhile, we got another technician inside the cab of the car turning the steering wheel frantically left and right. Is that sophisticated? That's what a power steering flush is. Transmission flush is the same thing. We just, the equipment and the fluid necessary to flush you good is what you pay for. And the time it takes. And sometimes it's 2 technicians, and you have to pay for that. That's why they're between $100 and $200, somewhere around there. So the real issue has to do, well, brake fluid, we have a more scientific way. We can look at the moisture content and the boiling point of brake fluid. The color, we're told, it doesn't mean much. And they have a new copper test, but then now we already have detractors that saying copper is not a good indication of the ability of the brake fluid. So that's kind of in limbo right now. Half the industry says check it for copper. The other half says BS. So coolant, again, we have a scientific way. Where are you at? Minus 40. How many miles you got on it? 80? It's done. It's over with. The mileage is timed out. So those are the things. But the default that's not going to hurt anybody is 60,000-mile intervals. All righty? Thank you very much, Harry. I appreciate you calling. Thank you. And let's go to Bob. Bob, you're up next.
Hi there, Mark. I've got a recurring problem with an 01 Jeep Cherokee. When it heats up, and usually the weather's warm and the engine is warm, if I stop, turn the engine off for 15 or 20 minutes, when I come back, it will barely run.
Okay, I want you to take a break real quick and go turn your radio down. Or turn it off. It's better off just to turn it off. We're on a 7-second delay, so if you say a bad word, we can take that bad word out of there. Or if I say a bad word, they can do that too. All right. I want to ask you, when you say it overheats, I want to know exactly where is it on the gauge. Is it half? Is it 3/4? Or is it in the red?
No, it never overheats. The engine temperature is right in the middle.
Okay.
It almost always happens when the engine is warm, and it happens more frequently on a warm day.
Okay, let me ask you questions, because that's where we can make more progress. So when you park it and you shut it off and you come back, it's a no crank or a no catch?
No, it cranks, catches, but it stutters. It's like it's
missing.
Like it's missing.
Okay, and how long does that last?
It lasts 10 minutes.
Okay, are you consuming any coolant at all? Are you adding to the overflow jug on a regular basis?
No.
Okay, and when you fire it back up after it sits for this period of time, does it hit on the first click? Otherwise, you hit the key and it starts right up even though it's missing? Or do you have to, is it extended cranking for a long period of time?
No, it hits right away.
Okay, then you have to figure out what's causing the miss. And what you have is on a warm start, I've got an engine miss. Now, if you had a blown head gasket during that time that the engine is shut off, it would pump water coolant into the cylinder. That would cause a miss. If you had an injector that was stuck wide open, and then you said you're not adding coolant, so I'm going to throw that away. Then I say, do you extended crank? Is it crank, 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 and then catch? And you said, no, it hits right away, but it still misses. Well, if the injector was leaking fuel, it would leak all the gasoline out, and you would have no fuel pressure. So it would take a while to build fuel pressure to get the car running, but you said, no, it hits automatically. Do you see how important the symptoms are for the correct diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely.
It means everything to the guy who knows on the other side of the counter. So in your particular case, we're going to have to duplicate it, and we're going to hook up engine analyzers to it and find out, first of all, where the miss is at. Is the miss on 2 and 4? And those happen to be on the same coil. Let's switch coil 2 and 4 to 5 and 6. And we're going to give it back to you. You're going to drive it, and you're going to come back and say, it's the same. And we're going to look, and you know what? The code moved. It says, now I've got a problem with 5 and 6. Well, I swapped the coil from 3 and 4, and I put it on 5 and 6, and I put 5 and 6 on 3 and 4. And so if I move the coil, and that's all I did. But if you're a customer that says, no, I'm not going to participate in your diagnostic process, I want it fixed, then I'm going to say, okay, fine, I'll put all the coils on it for you.
Well, and actually, I started by replacing one coil, 5 and 6, and it suggested from a mechanic. Then that didn't solve the problem, and I replaced the whole coil pack, and I've still got the problem.
Okay, well, you've already spent more money than most shops would charge you to diagnose it in the first place, so don't guess no more. Besides, if you did a coil for 5 and 6 and that didn't work and you thought it might be a coil, then just move that coil around.
Right.
Just move it around. But it's going to cost you between $75 and $150 to have somebody do it appropriately. I got to run, but thank you very much. And I want to remind you, too, that you can always get me 24 hours a day at mark@marksalem.com. That's my email address, mark@marksalem.com. And I'm happy to help you. I'm happy to help you. mark@marksalem.com. Phoenix Body Works is in the north side of town. Greg May, the owner, will be your advocate if you have an insurance claim. But trust me when I tell you, you'll need an advocate. They're hassle-free. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free and insurance company friendly. They know how to work with insurance companies hand in hand. They'll make sure your car is, here's the key, put back together the way it was the first time, the right way, on time, and at affordable price with quality parts, quality parts, quality parts. It is important to repair your vehicle to its pre-accident condition. Otherwise, you say, put me back the way you found me. That's why I recommend Phoenix Body Works and have for several years, and I've had nothing but happy customers come back to me. That's what makes my world rock, is when I have a customer who sends me an email saying, this is what happened, this is where I went. I went to one of your shops, and I'm tickled pink. That's what makes me happy.
1 minute.
So I'm proud to have Phoenix Body Works on my best car repair shops list. They're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. They handle Anthem. They handle North Phoenix. They handle all those areas up north. So if you want a good body shop, keep in mind Phoenix Body Works. Good guys, know what they're doing, and they're going to be an advocate for you. So they're going to work for you. And they are between you and the insurance company, whoever's paying for the bill. So it could be your insurance company. It could be the other driver's insurance company. The other driver's insurance company is going to put pressure on the body shop to do a cheap job and get out as cheap as they can. You're going to want somebody that knows right from wrong in the middle. That's why Phoenix Body Works is so important. Please drive safely. Please wear your seatbelt. And if somebody does something nice to you, would you just roll your window down, stick your arm out, and say thank you? That means a lot. I do that a lot, and I really like it when people do that with me. Mark@marksalem.com. I'll see you next Saturday.